Hello and welcome to The Shape of Work, a podcast series by SpringWorks. My name is Anoop and I am your host. Each week, we'll be talking to top people managers across the world on the future of work and how it's shaping our workplace. So sit back and get ready to find out more from these movers and shakers as we have a no-holds-barred, anything-goes conversation with them about their journey, their insights, their thoughts, and most importantly, their ideas and vision for the workplace of the future. Join in on the conversation, leave a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button.
A cricketer, a musician, the author of a national bestseller, worked with the United Nations and traveled around 48 countries. Kaustubh Sonalkar was all of this before being the group director at CM Communications CSR and General Affairs in Wellspun Group, where he works currently. Having expertise in fields like organization development, leadership, change management, talent management, and more, Kaustubh gives us some significant insights into employee engagement and employees' mental well-being in a remote workspace. In this episode, he also explains the newer opportunities for growth and investments during the pandemic.
Welcome to another episode of the Shape of Work podcast. Joining us today is Kaustubh Sonalkar, Group Director, HCM, Comms, CSR, and General Affairs at Wellspun Group. Welcome to the show, Kaustubh.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for giving us your time today. It's an honor having you on the show.
Pleasure.
So, Kaustubh, we usually start these episodes with our guests talking about, you know, their whole corporate journey, how they got into what they're doing. With yours, I'm sure this is going to be really picturesque, right, to say the least. You've done a lot of stuff. You've played cricket. You've judged Miss India competitions. You've composed music. You're writing books now. So I'm sure all our listeners would love to hear, you know, how you've gone about this.
So, you know, it is a very interesting story, and that's what I keep telling everybody whom I meet, that this is something, everything happens by accident to an individual.
Okay.
What happened to me. So I actually set out to become a cricketer, and right from a very young age, trained myself to become a cricketer, and started playing cricket. The idea was to somewhere play competitive cricket, and from school to clubs to college, and then I think that was the time when you start getting selected in the under 15s, under 19s, under 17s, and then you start growing the value chain in cricket, and which is something that I was passionate about, and neglected studies to the absolutely. I was least interested in what my marks or my GPA was. Fortunately, it was always not that bad. It was always on the higher side of the classroom. But I guess the first interest and the first love was always cricket. Right. So that's what happened to me. So I went ahead and started playing cricket for India under 15, under 17, Mumbai. And under 19 India, so I became a all-rounder and wanted to create a career for myself. Okay. 12th standard happened, and suddenly, I got some marks. I got good marks. And that time you used to have PCM and PCB. People of my generation would relate to that. Today, you've got all entrance exams for everything. But we had PCM, PCB. PCM meaning you do engineering, PCB, you do medical. That was the story. Yeah. And PCM was, I got about 96-97%, PCM 98%. The PCB, and my mom, like any other mom that time, said that, this is enough is enough. Cricket is the journey. It is over for you. And there is always one Sachin Tendulkar. No, you will never become a Sachin. So having, played with him, my dad, you came from forces. So he was from Air Force. So he said, you pursue your dream. Go ahead and do what you want to do. Forget what the lady is saying. So I went ahead and that was the time when 12th standard exam was on, it was about a month away, and we had our under 19 cricket World Cup and a tour to England. Went there, came back, and after that I scored this much. So I knew that, I could actually do well there. Right. Went and played county cricket in the UK. And I was set for larger, I thought I was set for something big in cricket. So I picked up cricket rather than doing my engineering or medical. Went in and joined, did BSc. And first year, it was Ranji Trophy first season. I played four matches. And that was a time when, there were rains in Mumbai. And when there are rains in Mumbai, you really can't play on the cricket pitches. So we played on concrete pitches. Met with an accident there. That was a time when I knew that that was the end of my career in cricket. And that time there were no so advanced. There were not not so much of you know the cricket the cricketing injuries were so hard that you know there were no medicine was not as advanced as it is today. And that was the time when I had to give up cricket. So I was on crutches for about 6 months. Didn't know what to do. Had given up all the careers in life, and now was back to doing BSc. And that's what I did. So that was the time when I started thinking that, you know, you need to do something in life. So I got into cultural events into college. And luckily, my institution, Mitebai College, was something which was there. And they kind of are good at cultural events. So I became the cultural secretary for Mumbai University. And that was the time I thought, yes, I have some flair for music. But after that, what to do? Because nobody knew what basically would do after BSc. And a lot of people, and my mom, like she was, and my grandmother used to be a headmistress. She went ahead and spoke to a lot of people. And they said, after BSc, the best thing that one can do is to become a chemist and MSc, and then you become a research analyst or something like that, and you will become good. I didn't want to do that. Okay. I said, the best thing to do, and my dad said, you do this, you are good with people, you have played team sport, why don't you try something which is different? And I wrote some competitive exams, got through London School of Economics, and the rest was history. So I joined them. After that, you know, music always stayed with me. After that, worked with Vodafone from there. And Vodafone was out of campus after LSE. And in Vodafone, you always start with marketing. So in marketing, I went to Edinburgh. Started selling the mobile phone, you know, schemes there. Believe me, nobody bought anything from me. For 6 months, I was an utter failure. And then they wanted us to write something about how mobile telephony can impact global, you know, on social, how will mobile phone telephony be of great impact and so on and so forth. So I wrote a paper. This was 91.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, 93, 94.
Okay, got it.
And that was the time when I wrote this paper. Ninety-five is when I got into Vodafone. So I wrote this paper and submitted. I didn't know it was a competition because I had all the time in the world. I was sitting in Scotland doing nothing, and nobody was buying anything from me. So wrote that paper and left it the way it was. Slowly, I started realizing my write-up was getting shortlisted from various stages. And final stage was a stage with the UN. And that's when they said that, you know, you are being selected and, you know, you get a prize and you get to work with the UN.
Wow.
So I was deputed to the UN to you know, basically with my project being, you know, saying on the project was injectable SIM. And And how can injectable SIM impact, you know, education and health for, you know, places like Africa and the countries which are not so advanced? Mm-hmm. So we went to, you know, so I was with UN, and getting into UN was great because you get to travel with the UN aircraft with a different, diplomatic kind of a passport. You go through, and it was a kick for somebody who was 24, 25. That was completely different. So traveled about 48 countries with the UN, 3.5-4 years with UN was like, I believe that was the most humbling experience in my life, because when you actually do that, you realize that what life is. Because you go to Africa, you know, we were shot at in Congo, in Sudan, South Sudan. We were kidnapped in Somalia. But what actually got stolen was water and food and clothes. And they didn't even touch money from us. You know? So it was that humbling. And so going to countries like Sudan, South Sudan, Congo, you know, the whole of Africa, Mongolia, you know, Afghanistan, Pakistan, you name it, and name the countries where you will never travel to is where we had to travel. But it was the best experience of one's life. So after that, came back to Vodafone, became the chief innovation officer. Music always was a part of me. So I kept writing music. I kept composing certain tunes. And that's what stayed with me. then moved to, you know, that was how corporate actually happened to me. And from there, moved to Vodafone, as a chief innovation officer, back to the AC, air conditioned office, suits, boots, everything. And then moved to Airtel. And that was where, you know, because my dad suffered a paralytic stroke, had to move back to India in 2001. So that was the journey there. And then moved to various companies like PwC, became the partner for, you know, then SR happened, where M&As were a part of the game. And then, you know, then Future Group happened, and PwC again as a senior partner for human capital and sports happened. And then, of course, now Wellspun happened. But, you know, music always stayed with me. So I kept creating music. I was to compose music for about 3 or 4 movies. Had to give it up because there was a M&A deal happening somewhere in Europe. So released my own album. And that's how music is. Even today, I create music. That gives me that satisfaction. It's that hobby which you always, if you're tired or frustrated, you come back home, spend that you know, 1 hour in this room, which is the studio that we have, and compose something. That's how it is. So that's been the journey, Junius. It's all about it's a bits and pieces journey of a person who's of master of none kinds. That's how it is.
But it is something that's, I mean, like you said, humbling, and you've done so many things. You've got to travel 48 countries. That's mind-blowing.
Oh, and actually, traveled 79, 48 with UN.
Oh, wow. Right. And for a 25-year-old, I think that's an insane experience. I'm 25, and I've probably traveled to 3 so far. Right. So when it comes to music, you never had any formal training or anything like that, right? It was just a hobby that you sort of worked on. Got it.
You know, it is again, in music, what used to happen is our school was a very funny school, because if you had a GPA which was above a certain level, that individual became the monitor of the school, of the class. That individual always got to sing. That individual always got to act. That individual always became the captain of the school. But if you don't have that GPA, you always stand behind, irrespective of what you are. So even if you're good at the trade, you don't get that. So right. I always used to wonder, ye kya hai? What is it that they have that, you know, what that I don't? So and it happened. Yeah, I guess.
Got it. Tell us about your book. It's called Fetch Your Own Coffee, and it is a national bestseller. What is it about? What inspired you to write it?
Actually, it is again an accident. So I don't believe the books teach you anything.
Okay.
I believe it could be a radical view, but because books are more theory, and I believe education is there are two types of people in this world. One who believe are educationists. The other one are practitioners.
Right.
And I guess the one and every trade teaches you something. So, for example, if you look at it, the practitioners actually teach you more than what the books would. Your real life experiences, and I can tell you, I can talk about experiences in the UN world, in the cricketing field. On you know, my, as I told you, my dad was in forces on that, and in the boardroom, because whatever decisions that you take are not based on what you learn on textbooks. Of course, the textbook give you that knowledge, but the wisdom actually comes from what your experience is. And I guess that was critical for us. And I believe that was the experience which was, and if you look at, and if you happen to read my book, you would see that, you know, I have picked up learnings from Bollywood movies. I have picked up learning from advertisements, transgenders, and cricket. And cricket, you know, if you look at how a captain actually looks at a particular situation, he doesn't need to refer to a book that the rule number 1.2.4 is this, so I need to do.
Right.
It is situational. And I guess that is leadership for you. That is situational. That's management for you. Management doesn't come from books. So I started writing blogs, Junius. And when I wrote those blogs, and you know, somebody said, now you've got a good compilation of blogs, why don't we convert them into a book? And so, you know, I was approached by Penguin. Mm-hmm. And they said that, you know, there are, and they, it so happened that the language in my book is not, may not be the perfect English language that Penguin otherwise requires.
Okay.
because I had taken a dig or I've spoken about certain aspects of management which normally are against the gurus, so called.
Okay.
So they said that we may not want to, you know, these are something that you know you might want to modify. I said no, I'm not modifying a word in the book. You want to print, you print. Otherwise, I'm okay with it. So that is what happened. We printed. So the book went on sale, and today it is where it is. So I guess I'm happy that you know it got published. So now you know it is. Once you write one book, you want to write a few more. So I'm attempting a few more. Some radical version. So that's all it is.
Okay. Got it. Sure. Now, moving on, let's come to the situation at hand. We are in remote work and it looks like we're getting out of the second wave. So what do you think has been the biggest challenge for organizations in terms of employee engagement, whether it's talent management or retaining the talent or, you know, hiring new talent? What has, you know, been a challenge over the past year since the pandemic hit us?
See, I think the challenge, I wouldn't say it was a period of challenge. I think it was a period of challenge, of course, from a pandemic perspective. But from an organizational perspective, I think it was a time when a lot of organizations reinvented themselves. True. They realized a lot of stuff which they didn't till for so long. So even if you go back to any organization, most of the organizations today, because one quality which human beings have, and I guess it's the most important quality which we tend to ignore, is adaptability.
Okay.
So we adapted to the situation, and initially the first phase was difficult because we were hit by the unknown.
Correct.
And that was the challenge that everybody thought, and the organizations didn't know what to do. Slowly, they grappled with stuff. And imagine you come from a technology world. If you look at it, the way organizations adapted to technology, the way they actually utilize technology, not from the entire value cycle today is managed so seamlessly across the various HR processes, is amazing. Right from talent acquisition to retirement, so hire to retire happened seamlessly even today. So, and I think that adaptability came in, realization came in that this is the time that you have got to reinvent yourself, rewrite your blueprint, put your pen to paper and try and get your thoughts together. None of the organizations have ever had this much time to actually realize whether they can actually, what is the thought that they have for the next 10, 15, 20 years that we are talking about. Third thing, adaptation of not only technology, but also a realization that that you can work from remote. Remote working is a possibility.
Right.
And if you look at results of a lot of organizations which have done, of course, there are certain sectors which got affected and they were affected big time. But the sectors which were not, the way they actually, the production didn't come down, the efficiency didn't come down. While there could be all the other pandemics where the financial pandemics, but all other difficult times where all, you know, there might be a CFO who was the core. This was the time when the needle shifted quickly to the CHRO, became the lifesaver of the organization. So this is the time when you realize that the CHRO is also a lifesaver for you. Because managing or people engaging, yes, there were times when people used to realize that how do you engage with people, how do you keep them motivated, but technology adaptation was so high that it actually made this time really fruitful in a way. So I would not look at it as a challenging time. I would look at it as a period where you reinvent yourself.
Got it. How did you reinvent yourself over the past year? How did you at Wellspun adapt to this?
See, there were two or three things again, as I said, that we, I in the last 1 year, I was in two different organizations. I just joined Wellspun about 4 months back, but otherwise, I was with SR. Mm-hmm. Again, both these organizations are infrastructure organizations.
Correct.
Right? So when you look at infrastructure organizations from an HR perspective, you know, the processes are far more structured, far more not that young, new age, HR processes, but are from a process perspective, very strong.
Okay.
Because they've been there for so many years. Mm-hmm. Now these organizations had to take the shift had to happen.
Okay.
Right. You had to make sure that the technology adaptation happens. People right. have to, because organizations of this nature don't have the kind of churn that young organizations like a technology or BPO have. So these organizations are organizations where attrition also is in single digits and lower single digits.
Okay.
But people have stayed on to organization for long. The age of the people and management is slightly on the higher side. So adapting mm-hmm. to making them realize that this is a change. Technology adaptation happened, but you know what? I think that also was a learning, because the way people adapted to technology and the way people actually connected on, because meetings started happening on Zoom, meetings started happening on other platforms like BlueJeans and Teams. The meetings were far more effective, because here is not the time when you chit chat or you have a the discipline started coming into meetings. You realize that engagement with people could happen on a structured 1 hour meeting, because you block at that 1 hour and you finish your meeting in that 1 hour. You have people because you've got back to back meeting lined up. So that discipline came in, because this is the basic things, right? Then people also had to be made productive. You get technology to make them realize how do you become productive? You train them on that. These are basic things that you make sure that how do you assign work to people? How do you get the best out of them there? Then how do you make engagement happen with people on a regular basis so that they don't miss out on what happened in the office? So you create a office online, which is similar to what it was offline. So how engagement, even your hobby classes, then mental health of people became extremely critical. How do you care for people? How do you, the employee care program actually came in the forefront. Mm-hmm. What also came in the forefront was the CSR activities that people were looking at. The amount of people, actually number of people who came forward to actually participate in them were very important, was huge. Even from an organization perspective, food in the first pandemic, if you remember, first phase, you had food and water and masks and everything which was needed. In the second phase, you didn't and you didn't have that much that coming in there. You actually had different problems to manage with oxygen cylinders and beds and so on and so forth. So it was a completely different shift. The organizations adapted to that. Engagement happened in a very different way, and employee well-being came into fore. Apart from as I said, all the other processes were so well oiled that nothing actually mattered and everything went on well. So I think that was a learning for me. Basically, you reinvent yourself in every which ways, and I don't want to get into the nitty-gritties of what actually people did and how innovative an organization became. But I guess if every organization, if you can touch upon the basics of an employee in terms of being engaged, getting to know, making them productive, getting them to be involved in processes and educate them, and they make sure that even working from home is not as bad as so today work from anywhere, and the hybrid structure has become a reality across the world. And so have these organizations adapted. So Wellspin has today. We push for for work from anywhere. So it is a big thing. So we have a work from anywhere policy. We have policies which are way ahead of times today. The diversity has increased. You can hire from anywhere. You've got talent sitting home today, willing to join. Today I don't need to say that if I hire somebody at X place, you come to Mumbai or to my office and work in the office. No, you can work from home. You work anywhere. The cost of hire has reduced. Because of these policies and because of these mediums, you can meet up with anybody anytime for as long as you want. So that I think these are the changes.
All right. Perfect. I think you've touched upon all the key points that I think a lot of us are noticing with the whole remote work environment that we're in, especially the whole access to the talent, right, which is usually localized where your organization is typically, but now with the whole remote work or hybrid work environment, you have access to talent across the country, right? So I think that is something that a lot of people have been talking about off late. And yes, engagement was initially a challenge. I think even now there are a lot of companies still not able to figure it out, not able to leverage technology, I think to the best extent that they can to engage with their remote employees. But I think it is an inherent challenge with remote work. And until and unless companies do, you know, put in that extra effort into sort of working around this challenge, they will still be skeptical about remote work. I think there are still a lot of companies that are skeptical about remote work. Right. Now, you mentioned employees' mental health, right? You said it's come to the forefront and it's a topic of discussion today. I do want to discuss that as well. What steps have you taken at your organization, you know, to address this issue? Every day, you know, employees are going through stress, anxiety. There's this whole gloom around them. The mood around them is very gloomy. What are you doing to, you know, sort of help your employees through this period?
So we basically realized that, you know, it's not only the employee who's the cause of this whole thing. It's about the environment that he or she is, and also the people at home, also the family. Most of our employees, because we are a large workforce, we've got about 40,000 people across, and most of them don't have the luxury of large houses. And we realized that, you know, small families were living there, you know, some people facing, you know, a lot of them had medical issues at home. And on one network, you got about three or four people working. There was this tension around. So we realized it quickly that, you know, it required not necessarily, you know, it required an intervention which was very important, which was an engagement intervention. So we kind of moved it from, you know, we made it fun for them. So we said, get your employees involved, get your family involved. Start in the morning, like you otherwise start. You start with yoga, Zumba, getting your even children involved and all those things. We went in the evening with hobby classes. We went to organizing circus for online circus entertainment. We did magic shows. We did and we did theater programs, and so entertainment even for you know, we realized there are old parents there. So how do you actually do that? These were things on the fun and the hobby side that we did and engaged them, because this was also the time when the children were at home and there was vacation. So how do you actually keep them engaged? How do you actually show them? So we organized photography sessions. How do you actually do? We did those hobby sessions for them, singing sessions, all those things. Apart from that, we also made sure that, you know, people remain engaged. With a lot of people had anxiety issues, and more from a medical perspective. So we did sessions with doctors. We had doctor on call. We had our entire wellness program, which basically is huge for us, where we thought, you know, if people needed anything, they need not actually. They could call everybody, any doctor whenever they want. There was counselors coming and talking to people. There were yoga sessions, meditation sessions on that. So we actually touched upon those aspects also. Then we knew that, you know, there were the other most important pieces. We need to give assurance to our people that if at all there was any issue with them, that we are there. The organization is there with you. So we set up, you know, hospital beds. We made sure that, you know, medicines were available to them. So those were things, you know, vaccination drives. All our employees are vaccinated today. So if you look at, we did vaccination. So those were things which are important. So and we started not with the head office. We started with the people on the ground, because those are your bread earners, right? So you make sure that, you know, those people are vaccinated so that they are, and the only way to fight this was to win over it. And the biggest the thing was vaccination. Okay. That was the ammunition that you had. So we actually did that. So I think we managed the entire value chain well from our perspective, and engagement happened and productivity happened because training sessions continued the way they were. While they were not in classroom, they happened online. So training sessions happened, leadership training happened. Everything the way you do in the office. Actually, we actually increased the frequency of programs. We increased the number of programs, and people actually got connected well. Today, you ask me, in 4 to 6 months of my career in my life with Wellspun today, thanks to the medium that today I'm connected with most of the people across locations. So I think that is what happened. Even at the leadership level, strategy happened well. We put a strategy for the next 5 years. So today, what is our strategy for the next 5 years? Performance management happened. Letters getting released on time happened. So everything which happened in as a clockwork. Yeah.
Got it. So I'm sure you being a conglomerate which has industries in different verticals, right? I'm sure you have a large portion of blue collar workers, right? How is it sort of convincing them to come back to work and things like that, right? I'm sure a lot of them might have had their inhibitions about coming back to work, considering that lockdown is there and cases are still spiking. How did you address these sort of challenges?
So our organizations, typically, you're right, we've got a lot of blue-collar worker. And what we have got is we have got captive blue-collar. Because okay. We've got our own colonies. And wherever people were not there, we converted our bachelor accommodations into colonies. Okay. And in a workforce of 40,000, at peak, we had about 230 people affected with COVID. And after that, today at 40,000, we've got three hospitals with 100 beds, but we have got only three people in that.
Okay.
So you know what we made sure that they realize, because awareness and education is extremely critical for blue collar. How do you reach out to them? How do you make sure that they are aware of it? And how are you educating them on the do's and don'ts of this? And we did that via, the vernacular. We use theater. We used various street plays. We basically we did short videos. We started a radio. We started a radio which could actually reach out to the last man on the mobile. So our radio, even the chairman could connect with the last person standing, saying that this is what it is. So it was these little things, because communication is key in these times. The how you communicate is important, because if I do a boring session with a person with 1,000 slides, is not going to work.
Correct.
How do you actually use the medium of theater, and how do you actually use the audiovisual medium was critical for us.
Got it. That's very innovative. I've never heard of using theater and radio, especially in today's day and age. But wow, you were very agile with the way that you addressed these. Hats off to you. Let's see, moving on. Okay, a little more business-oriented question, right? Do you feel this pandemic has given birth to newer investment and growth opportunities?
Of course. I think this pandemic has made the Indian Inc. Actually, India Inc. It has given a huge amount of opportunity. Right. The shift from China to India has happened.
Correct. You've written an article on LinkedIn on that.
I've written that article because I believe that this is the huge opportunity that today India has, especially the MSME sector, especially the sectors which are. Where manufacturing is going to be supply chain. India has that opportunity to become the manufacturing and supply chain hub of the world. And I guess if we don't grab it today, it's going to be our loss. Okay. All our policies are coming in for those to these things to happen. MSME sector has been given that kind of that kind of push by the government as well. And I guess young entrepreneurs, especially people of your age, should actually look at the entrepreneurial the ventures which can come in this. So a lot of things will change. This has been a time when look at even technology. The penetration of the internet into rural India has gone like to 33% from what used to be 7%. The penetration of your credit card is today at 11 to 12%, where what used to be about 2.5%. Now that is rural India for you. Rural India is today shopping online. Rural India, and that's something which is important. Your supply chain industry, irrespective of today what we think of, is by the day getting themselves ready to deliver things to you on time and in the best possible way. So look at it today. My mom who's 70 today is ordering stuff on Amazon. And it is a change, and that's what is the I think that's a crux. Manufacturing today is huge. Dark kitchens for Swiggy, Zomato, how these guys have moved from real time kitchens to dark kitchens, and how they are delivering anything today. Right. So I guess that this is the time, and India is going to. There is a lot of investments which will come in. The telecom sector will move. Will change. Technology will be in a big way. Change education, online education today. If you want to look at education, you can set up your university here and or any school here, and globally you can have your audience.
Correct.
It's amazing. I think the 1 year you will see the impact in the next 3 to 4 years.
Definitely, yes. Correct. Moving on. What are your views on the lockdown and this whole work-life balance, right? I've had a mixture of opinions on this, but when it comes to work-life balance, it has mostly been positive. Remote work especially. I had this very interesting perspective that one of my other guests had given me on remote work. And till that moment, I had never thought of it like that, right? He told me that, so he heads HR for an AMC in the US, but he has employees here in India, right? And he told me that typically we would not really get personal with our employees in other countries, but this remote work, through his Zoom video, I was able to see what he sees outside his window. And I don't think that's something that we would have otherwise thought of, right? You don't really see what the other person sees at home, whether it's the kid running into the room during a meeting, whether it's the wife bringing a cup of tea. And these are the kind of things that I think remote work has sort of opened up and has shown us. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Absolutely. I think remote work has really brought the world closer.
Right.
We become, we've been always talking about it's the family, it's one, and you're an integrated company. But this has actually brought it so close that today on a call, while you used to say, if at all I have to connect with somebody in the US, and on one call, you can be across the world, you can discuss anything. Post that, you can actually, somebody who said, you can actually peep into that person's house, ask them questions, get pally with them, understand what their interests are, get them into a room, and then create sessions for them. I think it has been an amazing experience for people to actually connect with all of them, and also get also interact. The remote work, I guess the word which is going to come up going forward is hybrid. And I think it is always, because there are certain times when you really want to be in office. Correct. And that is the time which and you need to have that. So I think hybrid working is going to be the call of the day. All of people will be given flexibility. That flexibility has to be. And today, if you believe me, India Inc. has adapted to that beautifully. So most of the companies, largest of the organizations have said, we work from home, we are hybrid. And I think that is going to be the call. I don't think so. I think it is work-life balance. Yes, even from an environment perspective, it's best for everybody because the carbon emission must have comes down. If you look at even your environment, otherwise the ESG principles from an organization perspective, ESG scores go up because your social factor goes up, your environment factor goes up. Governance, of course, comes in when you look at technology, but otherwise, yes. And that is where I guess it's affected big time for people.
Right. Got it. All right, Kaustubh. So this has been really enlightening. Thank you so much for your time today. We've, I think, touched upon a lot of topics that all our listeners are going to thoroughly enjoy. And your journey to where you are today has just been amazing. Like cricket, music, Miss India, UN, and now here, right? The corporate life. I don't know what is next, but I can I have a good idea that it's going to be epic, right? I'm really looking forward to reading your book. I will pick it up as soon as I can. And I've only just, gotten back into the habit of reading books. I think that is something that the pandemic has taught me, at least, right? If I had one takeaway from this pandemic, it was that, I need to start spending more time on myself. And what better way than to read books? So I will pick up your book and the books that will come soon, hopefully. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Junius. This was great interacting. Thank you.
Thank you so much.